Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
My new book, Diary of a Psychosis, is out. It's the most lively, devastating, baseball bat to the throat takedown of what the public health establishment did in 2020 and beyond that you can imagine. It's my first book in 9 years, and you're going to love it. Check it out at diaryofcovid.com. And if you've already bought it, make sure also to visit diaryofcovid.com so you can claim your free bonuses, including my free companion volume, Collateral Damage, a collection of stories from real people who suffered under the restrictions. They weren't allowed to tell their stories at the time, but every one of them told me, "We just want to be heard." Check it all out at diaryofcovid.com. Hey, everybody, welcome to the Tom Woods Show, episode 2448, with the great John Bush. John, it is a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. I've had you on a number of times. As I've said to people, I don't remember when I met John Bush, but it was probably in 2007, because we were both for Ron Paul. And John was one of these activists who, super hardworking, he's always out there in the trenches doing something practical, and he's always like 15% more radical than I was. And I was thinking, John, I don't know if I can follow you. And then he's proven to be right on everything. You know, if I should have just listened to John Bush in the beginning, I could have saved myself a lot of aggravation. John, we've talked to you in the past about some of the work you've done before with Brave New Books, but describe in a nutshell, if you had to tell somebody, this is a challenge, by the way, for my kids. What does your dad do for a living? You don't want to say he's a podcast host, because that just says loser. So how would you describe what you do, John, in a nutshell?
From my kids' perspective, first, thanks for having me on. And it feels pretty good to reach the status of the great Tom Woods. I don't know how you pulled that. You are great, right? But everyone refers to you as the great Tom Woods. You refer to yourself as the great Tom Woods sometimes. You are great.
I'm not so sure I've ever quite done that, but okay.
It must just be there then. I guess it's the truth. So thank you for that introduction. But I guess I would share with folks that I am a radical activist, a father of two, an entrepreneur. I have a lovely wife in Rebecca. And what my life's purpose is to create an environment where our freedom-loving friends and community can experience political autonomy, where we can truly self-govern. So I'm not satisfied with minarchism. I'm not satisfied with returning to the Constitution, although that's preferable with what we have today. But I fear we would just end up in the same situation we are now in another few generations. So trying to create a situation where we can experience true freedom, even if it's pockets while the statists are still doing their thing, we have created the leverage, we've created the environment, the situation to where we can self-govern.
Let me put in parentheses that one of the great things about John's life is that you're able to, in your work, do things that are part of your passion in life, that they intersect really well, which doesn't always happen, that your calling in life and your career intersect so nicely. Sometimes it's that you're doing a job that puts food on the table and that raises money that you can then contribute to other people who are working for a better future, but you're actively doing that. And that's a very satisfying thing. So when I met you back in 2007, I mean, what were you, like 8 years old? I don't know. Like, you seem like a pretty young guy to me. But what was the thing that, I mean, what is it? I'm always curious to know, in this crazy movement of ours, what is that thing that got somebody off the couch, so to speak, and out into the streets, so to speak? Like, what was it that you noticed, or who was it you were reading or talking to or listening to who persuaded you that something's not right, and I need to help make it right?
Sure. I've always been a bit of a rabble-rouser and got in trouble a lot in high school, middle school, and elementary school, and probably in preschool too, but we actually organized a protest to try to protest this tardy table policy in high school and got in all sorts of trouble. It was right after Columbine, and they're like, you guys are going to create another Columbine situation at our school. But it was just me being a rebel, maybe rebelling against my parents, but it was actually September 11th, 2001. Whatever happened on that day, that's what woke me up. I caught a documentary by Alex Jones called 9/11 Road to Tyranny on cable access in Austin. That's where he got started. He used to have a cable access show before he rose to infamy. And that was a big eye opener. And he presented a pretty compelling case that whatever took place that day, there was intelligence agency involvement, the CIA, Mossad, whatever it may be. There goes the YouTube feed. Interestingly enough, YouTube's been scrubbed with all these classic videos and Building 7 stuff. Anyway, that's what opened my eyes and led me down a rabbit hole researching the conspiratorial view of history. And, you know, unfortunately, those types of views have been shunned even within the libertarian movement, more of the intellectual kind of policy think tank libertarian movement. I would like get uninvited from conferences and stuff because I held those views. But nowadays, the conspiracy has just all come to reality and it's more evident than ever. But that's what got me started. I realized there was a massive injustice and that the United States government is full of lies and fraud. And I felt that that was unjust.
And then as time has gone on, so you, as you know, we've talked about this before, you had a bookstore for a while, which any bookstore, I feel it's like a restaurant in terms of, I would say, the profit margin over the long term. It's tough to keep going, especially when it's so ideologically focused, like, oh my gosh, I don't know how you could manage to do that. But you've got to a point now where the kinds of things you're doing are resonating with people and actually putting food on your table. So that's really good. One of the things that I associate with you is this crazy word agorism. And I know I have a bunch of people in my audience who are sympathetic to that. Of course, I'm sympathetic to it, but it can probably seem scary to people. Like, you know, I like freedom and everything, but I don't know. I think maybe this is a little bit too dangerous for my temperament. So can you describe it maybe in a way that might not make it seem quite so dangerous to people?
Sure, sure. So agorism or agorism, essentially, this might sound dangerous, but I usually describe it as revolutionary market anarchism. But now we're talking about revolution and anarchism. But essentially, the practicality of it, this was all iterated by Samuel Edward Conkin III in the New Libertarian Manifesto. And the practical side of it is to create and participate in what's known as the counter economy. The counter-establishment economy, right? The counterculture, counter-establishment folks in the 60s, they were pushing back on the government, you know, tune in, drop out or whatever, drop acid and drop out of school. This is about counter-establishment economics. And the idea is we should participate in these alternative economies. We should trade amongst ourselves. We should trade under the table. We should build alternative systems. There's a lot of talk about parallel economy these days, parallel systems, alternative institutions. And so the idea is if we want to create greater freedom for ourselves, if we want to create a truly free society, which was Samuel Edward Conkin's goal, he came from the Libertarian Party. He had some rhetorical battles and intellectual battles with Murray Rothbard. And he really laid out like a concrete, practical strategy for getting from here to there. There's a lot of libertarians and a lot of the movement were philosophizing about what a free society might look like and how would we make decisions and what about if there's a problem with justice or dispute resolution organization. It's all speculating. Samuel Edward Conkin said we should go experiment with actually building this thing. So part of it is, you know, disobeying unjust laws. But one thing that I've kind of synthesized, because at Live Free Academy, my company, I learned early on that a large majority of our audience is older than I am, boomers, seniors, and a lot of people have worked their butts off their entire lives. And so there's some young radical and folks even younger than I am that have less to lose that they're like total agorists, like outside the system. But I recognize there's a lot of people that have assets. They have a mortgage. They have a 401k, an IRA. They have kids in a school or private school or whatever. And they don't want to put that at risk. That's how I kind of developed this inside-outside game I'd love to tell you about where we can use caution. We don't have to put ourselves at unnecessary risk, but we can prepare ourselves for what's to come and the day where we may find ourselves forced to completely exit the system. I think it's important that we have kind of a foundation laid for ourselves in order to do that.
I've gone back and forth about whether politics can be helpful to us or not. Whether in an extremely unusual situation like a Ron Paul, which is who knows how many times likely to be repeated, I think not that many, can play a kind of educational role. But at the same time, I feel like opting out of politics altogether just turns, I mean, I know I'm just telling you arguments you hear all the time, but you know, that's not a completely dumb argument. It just turns the whole realm of the state over to really, really terrible sociopaths. And I would at least like to have some kind of defensive posture in there to protect against that. Are you saying that that's not a good use of my resources?
When I learned about anarchism and saw that politics kind of was a farce, I used to have like this air of superiority, like I'm the smart anarchist and you guys are the statists. But I came to realize, you know, as far as like libertarian strategy goes, which is very important to talk about, right? People should just do what feels best for them and what they're best at, what fulfills them. But I will say, I believe that there are enough of us already where if we shifted our strategy to this whole exit and build thing, exiting the system, building alternatives, I do think that we could experience liberty in our lifetime. The challenge with politics, while it is positive and beneficial, obviously, to have a Thomas Massie in office, and Ron Paul more so, because he was terrible. He was a terrible legislator. He never really got very many bills passed, right? But he most definitely ignited a liberty movement, which brought us together, which brought all these people together, which sowed so many seeds of freedom. But I believe that the problem with politics is, yes, it's beneficial to have a defensive posture to slow the growth of tyranny, but ultimately it's the institution of the state which is leading to all of these problems. And while there may be value in slowing that down, trying to make government just a little bit more tolerable, ultimately, if we don't do the work to create the alternative means of social organization, the alternative means of fulfilling our wants and needs that's built upon voluntary, decentralized, consensual means, as opposed to coercive, corrupt, centralized institutions, if we don't build this escape raft, this lifeboat, for example, then we'll forever be caught in the vicious cycle of politics where even if our guys get in power, you know, power corrupts absolute, power corrupts absolutely. So kudos to the folks that are trying to reform the system. Something that comes to mind too is people are like, well, should we go into ISIS and reform ISIS? Like that would help things, right? Anyway, if we create this alternative, I think that not only could it help our community to experience freedom, but finally we could show the masses that there's another way to organize ourselves as a group of human beings that doesn't involve coercion, that doesn't involve centralization. And ultimately, I think that'll get us closer to fulfilling and to being close to our inherent freedom that we all are born with.
Well, I can certainly understand frustration with people who think once we are victorious politically, then from that vantage point, having the power of the state behind us, we can then try and fix all the problems. Whereas, you know, that may never happen. That day may never come. If it does come, then it'll still, our efforts will not have been wasted in the meantime. You know, but like, in other words, it would be nice if someday somebody got elected and abolished all the bad things, right? But if that doesn't happen, I won't regret having spent my time trying to build up the institutions of a good society or trying to build up the infrastructure of the society in which I would want to live someday. That's still a good use of my time. So let me take this in a little bit of a different direction. As somebody who's been around a while, who's been an activist for a while, when you look around at what we face today, what do you think are the, like, what are the big threats we have to really watch out for? I mean, obviously, we've seen that big pharma in collusion with the government can yield us things like those mandates that everybody get the shot, stuff like that. Obviously, that's one thing we need to be aware of. What are some others?
Sure, sure. One last note, though, on to finalize that last thought. What we're advocating for doesn't necessarily require the entire smashing of the state or dissolution of the state. I think practically speaking, that may never happen. As you said, there's people that just are comfortable in their servitude and the thought of the personal responsibility that comes with true freedom frightens them to death. They don't want it. We saw that 10x when it comes to all the COVID stuff and all the weird woke stuff. But like we're trying to carve out pockets of freedom in a practical way out in the country, maybe out in Mexico. We're here in Central Texas. The Free State Project's got some cool stuff going on and they are leveraging politics successfully. But I think practically speaking, what we're trying to, the statists, the people that prefer to be governed by their inferiors can do that. We're trying to do something over here and maybe we can reach a critical mass of people that hop on board where eventually we've decoupled ourselves and we're barely even using government services except for the roads. We can reach some kind of agreements to have some semblance of sovereignty. Just want to throw that out there. But as far as threats that we're facing today, yeah. So there's the traditional tyranny. That's what I grew up worrying about, right? Taxation, the police state, the NSA and surveillance. But what I believe the biggest threat we're facing now is this concept of technocracy, which essentially is like shifting government away from rule by politicians, which isn't optimal in the first place, to rule by this scientific dictatorship. And of course, the World Economic Forum, the United Nations and their sustainable development goals, they're very much pushing for this. Essentially, it looks like a panopticon society, total surveillance. And there's four pieces of technology that this predator class is really trying to push. And that's central bank digital currencies, huge concern. And you have people like Donald Trump saying, I think Vivek Ramaswamy got in his ear, but saying that he won't allow that if he's president. But, you know, he's the guy that's behind Operation Warp Speed. He grew the swamp, grew the debt, had all sorts of authoritarian measures. He's better than Biden, but nonetheless. So you got CBDCs, big concern, not just with the financial surveillance, but then the programmable aspect of the money, where they could shut you out of the economy. If you listen to too many Tom Woods podcasts, they could say like, hey, you've used too much carbon this month and we're going to put a tax, or we're not going to allow you to go visit your grandparents in South Dakota or whatever, all sorts of stuff. Your most recent check-in with the doctor due to our socialized medicine said that your cholesterol is too high. So now we're going to put an extra fee when you go to buy the Twinkies, whatever, who knows. CBDCs, super concerning. Digital IDs, these are being pushed. This is being accelerated. There's talk of requiring a digital ID to access the internet. Now, of course, there's ways around that, which I always enjoy sharing with people. The other piece is the vaccine passports, which vaccine passports was just the first application. Thankfully, there was massive pushback, which gives me hope. This didn't take foot. But the vaccine passport, more than being about the vaccine, is about controlling people's freedom of movement and their liberty. So that could very easily be coupled with a MyPass carbon credit system, to where you have used too much carbon this month and now you can't pass through this 15-minute city checkpoint kind of deal. And all this stuff sounds far-fetched, but I mean, come on, they're talking about it in their own words. It's not far-fetched anymore. I guess I used to use that disclaimer back in the day, but now it's like so in your face. And then the final piece is the social credit score, which is a big concern. So it's like tracking all your, everything you say online, tracking how woke you are, your carbon score, all this nonsense. These four pieces of technology, I believe, will be joined together to create a pretty nightmarish dystopian future. That's what I'm concerned with. And I think the ultimate solution to all that stuff is to exit and build.
Okay, now that is a catchphrase of yours. I think we can probably speculate on what that means, but exit and build can mean literally exiting, like physically where you live and going out into the countryside and building something new. And I know that that is something that you've talked about, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily have to mean something quite so disruptive, because I will be honest with you, John, that holds no appeal for me whatsoever. I would yep. never want to do that. So how can you express exit and build in a way that would be appealing to a guy like me who, sorry, but he rather likes his existing comforts?
He likes the Mortons.
I do. Everybody likes to have a steak at Mortons, except my vegan listeners.
There you go. And they won't like that. But exit and build. Actually, Derek Bros coined the term in his book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. You had him on to talk about that book in the past. And it started off by exiting your physical location and building elsewhere. And when it comes to that technocracy stuff, the smart city is a big concern. But, you know, we've expanded the concept to essentially mean exit the institutions that you find to be unethical, you find to be morally reprehensible, you find to be useless, and build new ones. But the way to look at it pragmatically, again, I'm like, as you know, with business and marketing and trying to reach people, you got to understand your audience. And so we're like, exit the system and stop paying taxes and abandon all these commitments and blah, 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 and build out here and let's go in a hippie commune. It's not about that. And in fact, I try to flip the script and it's like, let's build these systems so as to pave the way for us to exit gracefully without risking everything, right? But some examples are like exiting the banks, and you can still keep a bank account. I mentioned the inside-outside game again. It doesn't mean withdraw all your money and never use a bank again, but it does mean you should know how to use cryptocurrency, especially privacy coins like Monero, right? It means that you should have some friends that you could barter with, right? So exit the banks, build counter-economic trade networks. Exit the reliance on the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Try to lean into holistic remedies. exit a total dependency on the grocery store, which most people are 100% dependent on their sustenance. Food is such an important need. It's all coming from these centralized supply chains that are so vulnerable to disruption. We saw that with COVID. Again, all this stuff, it used to be speculation. It's coming. The system's going to crash. And we like got close to some pretty serious pain during COVID. People experienced major pain during COVID. So now it's like, let's grow our own food, or at least let's connect with local food producers and ranchers, exit the government schools, build homeschool co-ops, right? And so one great exercise for people is to kind of do a self-assessment and to say, what areas of my life am I most dependent on the system, on these centralized institutions? And what does that look like? How vulnerable am I? And how can I slowly but surely start to decouple myself? Because one thing that was revealed with COVID that we already were aware of is the strategy that the predator class, these COVID idiots are taking is, we want to get you to do something that you may not want to do. And if you say no, we're going to try to pressure you, socially engineer you, take away what we see as your privileges until you comply. And that's exactly what happened with the rollout of these stupid shots. They took away people's ability to earn a living if they didn't take the shot. So it's important that we're aware of what we're facing and we slowly but surely start decoupling ourselves. It doesn't mean you got to abandon it all, but you should be ready to, because we could reach someday where the central bank digital currencies are fully implemented. And now they say, if you don't take the shot or if you don't comply with these carbon measures, then you're going to be locked out of your ability to buy and sell goods and services. So at that point, you're like, well, thank God I took John's advice and I already have a network of people that I've been collaborating with and trading with. I got the food producers, so on and so forth. You guys can shove it. I'm not going to take your shot and I don't want to use your money anymore. It's just thinking in that kind of strategic way. And I think COVID really revealed that this is something that we should all be worried about and taking action on.
Hey everybody, quick message from Old Woods here. If you're watching me on video, look what I have in my hand. See? Look. See this? This is my 16-page print newsletter, the Tom Woods Elite Letter, that I mail in the physical mail to people who support the Tom Woods Show. That's one of the 800 zillion benefits you get as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show. And it's 100 octane woods. Now, don't write to me and say, well, that's actually not the correct usage of octane. Shut up. You know what I mean. It's full of hot, great, fantastic content. All original, nothing like my amazing email list. All fresh, new stuff that you've never read before. Coming in the mail to you every single month. Isn't it nice every once in a while to read something not on a godforsaken screen? And is there any other content creator out there sending you a physical newsletter in the mail? I think the question more or less answers itself. But as a member of the Tom Woods Supporting Listeners program, you also get invites to my Christmas party every year and also to my murder mystery dinner parties that I hold all over the United States. Everybody else has to pay hundreds of dollars to attend those, but not you, smart supporter. You get in for free. Not to mention you get to join the Tom Woods Show Elite, where you can talk in my no censorship group to other normal people. Plus, you get transcripts of all the interviews I do and so many other goodies, you're going to feel like a kid in a candy store. So how do you get all these goodies, including, look at this thing. Look at this thing. Look, 16 pages. Look at this thing, all right? You get that every single month in your mailbox. How do you get all this stuff? Supportinglisteners.com. You've been thinking, maybe I should do that, right? Today's the day. I am the voice of that angel, the good, you know, the good one that's telling you to do good things. That's me right now. So head over to supportinglisteners.com. Be a part of the greatest community in the world. Get more goodies than anybody's given you in the world, as well as my profound thanks. John, did you happen to see that poll where they asked several different demographics, but the most interesting one was Ivy League graduates? So brace yourself. They asked these people, would you support rationing food, gas, and some third thing in order to fight climate change? And John, it's 89% yes.
Wow.
Now, granted, Ivy League graduates are the most conformist people in the world.
Yeah.
They have got to be perceived as being on the correct side. So maybe some of them are saying what they think the pollster wants them to hear, which goes to show they're completely tone deaf, because this was not a pollster that wanted to hear that, but 89%. So, but at least a chunk of these people are being sincere. So this is not some weird fantasy that you and I dreamed up, that at some point they might try to do this. You ask them, and that is what they want to do. They're not trying to hide this. That is what they want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely concerning. And that's the voting public. There's always this like preparation phase. So if you're conscious, first of all, to harken back to Alex Jones, right? Love him or hate him, the guy's been right more often than he's wrong. And his whole methodology is just to study their own documents. And I got the documents right here, right? To study what they're saying at these big conferences that they put on, the World Economic Forum. And I just saw a clip from the most recent World Economic Forum meeting where they're talking about MyPass. And they're like, we are not very far off from being able to have, everyone has a personal carbon allowance, PCA, personal carbon allowance. You already have when you get a flight now, and there's even credit cards, like green credit cards. It shows what your carbon score is and how much carbon you're using. So they're most definitely trying to do this global carbon tax. They're trying to limit the output of carbon, even though that's what produces life. And they are going to most definitely take away rights and privileges in order to pressure people into complying with this ridiculous green agenda. So that's coming down the pike. And absent some mass conservative, you know, libertarian with conservative, it'll probably be conservative, more mainstream MAGA type thing, but it's got to have libertarian leanings or it'll just be co-opted, right? Absent some mass uprising of a huge body of people that are like, no, we reject this wholeheartedly. And if you're in office, and the elections aren't fraudulent, we're going to throw you out of office. I believe that this type of stuff is inevitable, most definitely in Europe, if there's European listeners. That's already so far gone, unfortunately. That's why it's important to be in a place like Florida, even if you're in the city, Tom. Florida is definitely superior to most of the other places. Great place like Texas. But you're in Washington, D.C., you're in San Francisco, New York City. A lot of this stuff is already being implemented. And it's important that we start to identify some areas, some ways that we can escape this. Let's also not forget, too, everybody's so caught up in our own heads. There's this great indigenous practice where you project into the future and you're like, what are my actions, the actions I'm taking today or the actions I'm not taking today, how does this affect the future seven generations to come? And if we being aware of this, we having just gone through COVID, we recognizing the philosophy of liberty and what government and these NGOs and big corporations and these Harvard and Yale graduates are capable of, we need to take more action because future generations aren't going to have these great podcasts to listen to. Like they're going to wake up with a digital ID, CBDC, social credit score already set up and there's going to be no escape. So it's a big picture kind of deal, not just creating a better life for ourselves.
Can I just ask you in parentheses, what's your initial impression of Javier Milei in Argentina? You like him?
I'm excited about it. I mean, he's not perfect. I think that it represents a pretty good turning of the tide. I actually thought about him earlier when you said something. I forget what it was. One commentary I have on that whole thing, our movement, liberty, truth, conspiracy people, the libertarian movement, everybody's so jaded. When a victory just like punches them in the face, they're like, no. It's part of the plan. It's all a psychological operation. He's going to the World Economic Forum. He's co-opted, right? He's one of them. And then he goes to the World Economic Forum. I saw you've sent some emails on this. And he just totally rails on socialism and like drops so many truth bombs. Ron Paul would be proud. Murray Rothbard would be proud. So I'm a fan. I think it's a good sign. It seems like the tide is turning. Maybe when things go so hardcore socialism and actually the fruits are evident of how terrible of policies those are and people are really suffering, it swings back the other way. But I think we're a ways off here in the States from a president like that.
No doubt. But it's been interesting to see, and I'm hoping, I just don't know if I can make it work, but I'd love to visit Argentina anyway, just for the heck of it, but in particular
sure.
Now, just to get a
El Salvador
sense of things.
Too.
Yes, indeed. Yep. So I'd like to get a sense of things. So I thought about this topic because I've done episodes on the Tom Woods Show before on Sam Konkin and his ideas in the past. And then I saw that you had done like a big presentation on this to your audience that you have built laboriously over the years. And I thought, you know, I wonder, I think there are probably people interested in this now who feel like I've tried every strategy there is and I've sent in campaign contributions and I've voted and I've done all this. And maybe it's made some minor changes along the edges, but it's not generating the kind of genuinely life-changing kind of changes I'd like to see made. So I thought, let's talk to old John Bush and even have you make that same presentation to my people.
Yeah. So I put together this webinar recently. It's called the Counter Economy Webinar. And I just break down in more depth Samuel Edward Konkin's strategy. And again, everything that I do echoes Tom and the School of Life, right? It's all about practical action items. Like, what can I actually do in my life to change my life? But then when enough of us do that and we're all coordinating together through organized effort, we could actually change the world, right? So the Counter Economy Webinar, it really emphasizes the technology aspect, because the technology, you know, we don't need to seed over blockchain to them and seed over certain technologies. We need to be leveraging these tools for our own freedom and privacy. So we spend some time focusing on encryption, encrypted messaging, so we can communicate privately about this freedom stuff, right? Even if people have, quote unquote, nothing to hide, you may find yourself one day waking up and just living our life as free people or relatively free people ends up being criminal. So we talk a lot about technology. We get into Bitcoin, but more so Monero. So a lot of folks in our community, they bought some Bitcoin on Coinbase maybe, and they're kind of bought into this concept of digital gold, which is what it's become. But really, Bitcoin has some privacy problems. The blockchain and all the transactions are completely transparent, and most people onboard into Bitcoin by doing a KYC check where you got to scan your driver's license, know your customer. And then if you have your Bitcoin in an exchange and you send it to your own wallet, it can be known that this driver's license bought this Bitcoin and then sent it to this wallet, right? And so who knows where that's all going to come. I know that Bitcoin mining facilities, they're wanting Bitcoin mining facilities to register with the government and even give like GPS coordinates. That's pretty worrisome. But there's another cryptocurrency that really is better as peer-to-peer digital cash, which is what Bitcoin was intended to be. And it's completely private. All of the transactions are completely obscured. It's called Monero. So we break down Bitcoin. I'm still a big fan. I'm still all in on Bitcoin, but its use case is more of a store of value, of a wealth building tool, wealth preservation tool, in order to use cryptocurrency for online purchases, even as the CBDCs get rolled out. I think Monero is a huge piece of it. So we spend some time essentially talking about how we can apply the strategy of Samuel Edward Konkin in Agorism to Bitcoin, to privacy online, and to Monero. And again, it's super practical, super approachable, and I teach it in a way that honors folks not wanting to put themselves at risk, not wanting to put their assets at risk. But really, this is all stuff that we should be thinking about and that we should be taking action on today, because things are bad now. They're going to get, I mean, things are good if it's all about mindset, right? I know you have a good life, I have a good life, but still, things are getting pretty weird out there. So it's important that we have some stuff prepared and we go ahead and start trading amongst ourselves. But yeah, you invited me to put this on for your audience. Really excited to do that. I think it'll resonate with where people are at. And I'm really honored that you invited me to do this webinar.
Well, the domain name has about 817 characters in it. So I made it into tomwoods.com/John Bush, you know, a little bit easier. And by the way, everything I do is tomwoods.com/something. That's my trademark now, tomwoods.com/John Bush. See, you now have your own link, John. I mean, as befits somebody who is known as the great.
The great. Your website should be thegreattomwoods.com.
That's fine. I appreciate that. Somebody should buy that. So, folks, it's time once again for the story of Bad Luck Ichabod. Poor Bad Luck Ichabod. He was smart enough to know he should own some gold. But that's where the smartness ended, my friends. That's where it ended. Because it sat there and sat there. But old Woods here was smart enough not just to buy gold, but also to open an account with Monetary Metals. Old Woods earns interest on his gold, paid in gold. What's the advantage of letting your gold just sit there, as Bad Luck Ichabod does, when you can be earning up to 5% in Monetary Metals' gold leasing program, or double-digit returns in their gold bonds if you're an accredited investor? And it really is true. I've put my money, my gold, where my mouth is, and opened an account with Monetary Metals, an account I've had for about 2 years now. It's time for you to do the same. Join me and our old friend Jeff Deist as we lead an honest money revolution that starts by opening an account at Monetary Metals today. Go to monetary-metals.com/woods to learn more. That's monetary-metals.com/woods. So I've talked to people like Derek and a guy who at least is known as Gabriel Custodiet about privacy. And sometimes the things that they're asking of me seem to just be beyond my abilities to do. So for instance, to be your best friend, John, do I have to take all my money out of the bank? Like, do I have to unbank myself? Is that a requirement, or can we be friends even if I don't do that?
No, I mean, I still have a bank. I accept credit cards for multiple businesses. I'm trying to build wealth. I have a little bit of an IRA. I'm not a big fan of the whole stock market thing, but I have some stocks, right? And so it's just about being practical, and people are going to come at it from different spaces. So some people are going to take it and run with it. Usually it tends to be younger people that have less to lose. Like Janis Joplin said, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. But there's a lot of folks that are established. They work their entire lives in order to retire or to create this nest egg. And I would never give anyone advice that would put them at risk of losing that. But what I'm trying to teach is this practical inside-outside strategy. Keep one foot inside the system. You got the bank account, whatever, healthcare, whatever is working. A lot of people are receiving Social Security. I'm very concerned for people that are living in our freedom movement that are living entirely on Social Security, because that's most definitely going to be used as a string in order to manipulate people. But you got one foot on the inside, and then you start to build out the outside, the exit plan. So keep the money in the bank if you wish, but understand that you don't have control over that money, and it's not actually your money. And they limit, I just heard somebody couldn't withdraw, but only under $3,000 at a bank in the United States of America. So there's bank runs, who knows what could happen, right? So keep the money in the bank. Don't leave your corporate job if you like your corporate job and you got a nice retirement plan or whatever, but start to really think about, where am I dependent on the system? Because that dependency leads you to be vulnerable to this manipulation and social engineering that we all came to know under COVID. So start to build this exit plan, start to build these little side things. Maybe it's a side hustle. Maybe it's under the table. Maybe it's not. Start to learn how to use cryptocurrency, not just hold it as an investment, but how do I buy and sell? Who do I buy and sell from, especially when it comes to food? So yeah, it's totally practical. And I definitely honor the fact that people are coming at this material from all sorts of different walks of life and different levels of risk they're willing to take. So I try to provide something for everyone.
Well, maybe a good example to help people conceive of this better would be the case of homeschooling. It's almost a cliche now. I mean, that's actually how successful the movement into homeschooling has been, that it's the example everybody turns to. That's an example of something a large number of people decided to do, and it got to the point where there was just no political way of stopping it. It's true, some states have more onerous requirements than others, but generally you can do it pretty much anywhere at this point. So that's an example of, we did not overthrow the government school system. It is still functioning as ever. But what we did do is substitute something else.
Mm-hmm.
And we created something in addition to that. So I feel like I've tried to contribute to that. I mean, you mentioned the school life program. And that's the most important thing I do. But also, like with the Ron Paul homeschool program and Liberty Classroom website, the idea of that is, no, it's true. I am not able to get Randy Weingarten's teachers union empire shut down. And I am not able to do anything to reform the history department at Yale University. But that's okay that I can't do those things. I'm come to terms with that. I've met peace with that. What I can do is create, is, as you say, exit and build. I've spiritually exited that system. I'm not in it anymore. And I've created alternatives for other people. So if other people also want to exit, I've helped to make that marginally easier for them, because they can say, well, I can exit, and my teacher can be Tom Woods, you know, for my kids. That's not too shabby.
Yeah, and that's a perfect example. And also, when it comes to activism, I know you got a lot of activists in your audience. It's like, we have limited time and energy, so we should be choosy with where we put that time and energy. And the perfect example is going to the school board meeting, and people are rah, 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 banging their head against the wall. And sometimes there's victories, right? More often than not, there's not. But if you could take that energy and put it into creating the alternative, you could essentially decouple yourselves to where those institutions are less relevant over your life. So yeah, totally practical speaking. And again, the big picture thing is, if we don't build these alternatives, if we don't have the alternative curriculums, we don't have the homeschool co-ops, if we don't have the food co-ops, if we don't have an economic trade amongst ourselves that's outside the system, alternative currencies, whatever it may be, ideally a little bit of all of those things, if we don't build this out, then we're forever going to be playing catch up and all of our energy will simply be slowing the growth of tyranny as opposed to creating the systems that are necessary, in my view, to experience true freedom, not just for ourselves in the present moment, but for the future generations yet to be born.
By the way, I think what you just said is extremely important, that very often we're in this mode where we're reacting to what other people are doing to us. Like we're trying to live, we're trying to just have a normal life, and then we're constantly put upon by, you know, whether it was, I mean, the vax mandate thing was just off the charts crazy, but it could be your local school board, it could be, there are all kinds of people making your life difficult. And you can spend your life just putting out every single one of those fires, or instead of, and now there's nothing wrong with putting out fires, but you're never going to build a house if all you do is put out fires. And so the John Bush strategy is build something instead of just putting out fires. So go to John's thing. I'm going to be there, tomwoods.com/John Bush. And let's talk about things we can do, like real here and now, practical things, not theory, not things we could do 500 years from now, but practical things we can do right now, because we've, as I keep saying, we've written a lot of articles, we've written a lot of books, and I'm not against that. That would be crazy self-sabotage for me to say, don't read books. Mm-hmm. That's half of what I do. But the time for actually doing something, I think, has long passed. So we should jump in energetically. So, John, I appreciate your time. I no doubt you have a final word. And I don't mean to suggest that you're a blabbermouth, but I know that you always have something to say. So what is your final word?
Let me think of something clever real quick. No, just to echo, like you were saying, it's critical if we want to create better lives for ourselves. And also part of this activism thing we're a part of, that we focus our energy on proactive endeavors instead of, like you were saying, being reactive. Because when we're reactive, we're playing the enemy's game. When we're proactive, we're charting our own course. I know you did some work on goal setting recently. So let's come up with personal exit and build goals where we can slowly but surely decouple. Let's come up with collective goals as a community or a freedom cell, right? And when we do so, then we're in charge of our own destiny. I always encourage people to act like a horse with blinders on. So you got the latest controversy here, the school board's doing this now. And everybody's just so distracted and social media is overwhelming. And it's like our attention is going where other people want it to go, not where we have predetermined where we want it to go, because we have a plan, we have goals, and we've mapped out a strategy on how we can improve our lives to become more free, more prosperous, more healthy, to have better relationships with our family and friends, right? So you got to be real conscious about the life design that you want, and you got to focus on that. That doesn't mean if there's a big, like obviously if the house is on fire, we need to put the fire out. But like you said, we're never going to build our house if we're always putting fires out. So try to be proactive as possible and not getting distracted and pulled and yanked around here and there. Because that's what the enemies of freedom, they want you to be distracted on the latest controversy as opposed to building a good life for yourself. So thanks so much for having me on to share all that. And I appreciate all the work that you're always doing, Tom. Keep it up.
Good man, John. By the way, John is a guy, you can attest to this, that when I'm puzzling about something, I've got some, whether it's a business issue or whatever, I frequently try to get John's opinion, right? I was chasing you down last week. Look, I just need 5 minutes of your time. I want to run something by you.
I'm your guy.
And then I finally did get you on the phone. And then we ended up saying, why am I happy on the show? So I'm glad we did that. So John, thanks so much. Check that out. I'll be on this little session with John. He's full of ideas. You'll like a lot of them. So check it out, tomwoods.com/John Bush. And John, thank you so much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free. And we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.